Hi, this is Mike Ross, public address announcer for your Toronto Maple Leafs, and this is the Leafs Late Night Podcast, your post-game destination. And now, your starting lineup, Roscoe, the Fanalist, Southey, Beaner, and Darty Brodeur on the Leafs Late Night Podcast.
So here we are, once again. For a third year in a row on this podcast, we have the basically the same sentiment where it's we're out of the playoffs and it's, do we trade this person? Do we run it back? Do we fire the coach? Do we fire Shanahan? Do we blow it up? Do we not? What is the problem? Blame everyone. Well, here we are. It's May 9th and Sheldon Keefe has been relieved of his coaching duties. And tomorrow morning, we are going to hear from Brendan Shanahan and what's his name? The new guy at MLSE?
Keith Pelly.
Keith Pelly. Thank you. So, welcome back to Leafs Late Night, where it is finally too late for the Leafs. I'm your host, Roscoe, and I'm joined by the man himself, Justin Beaner. This is a rough week in Leafs Nation. It's taken a while for me to fully digest what happened. If for anyone watching, I'm wearing my new Drew House reverse Leafs jersey that was on sale. And I realized it was on sale because it was like Adidas knew they were going to get knocked out in the first round because this was arriving after game seven. So I sadly received this like the day after, but I'm wearing it on the yellow and black side because, you know, here we are where the Bruins own us once again, and it just feels appropriate. It's like Bieber knew that this was going to be an ongoing thing. He's like, you know, let's just put Bruin colors on the inside for when the Leafs have to switch allegiance.
Yeah, but would you really call it own? Like, it's not like we got swept.
No, it's just, it doesn't, I feel like if we got swept, this would be a completely different conversation. It's the fact that it's the exact same thing over and over again. It's that they can get themselves to this point. They can pull off a couple comebacks. They can, they play lazy the first couple games or the first game, whatever it is. Like they've managed to get to game seven against whatever team it is and lose. I mean, last year against Tampa withholding, but like this ability to make it to a make or break situation and not have a single person that can rise to the occasion is just heartbreaking.
Well, and it's also something to be said, the fact that they made it to a game seven despite being down 3-1. With their power play working at what, -20%?
Like, yep. You're without Matthews, you're without Nylander, you're without Wall. Like at different times, you're kind of cycling out your most important players, essentially. And it's like every year there's some sort of excuse, and I feel like the resounding sentiment from everybody, I mean, not everybody, but for a lot of people, is that this is kind of like the end of the runway for excuses. Even like we went through, oh, we didn't have Tavares. Oh, we went through goaltending wasn't great. Oh, we went through, you know, Matthews missed a couple games in the beginning of the season. You know, he had a wrist injury. Like now it's this, like it's always something. And it's, I feel like with this group as it is, it's always going to be something. That's just the way it feels.
I can see how that would be a concern and how that would be a thought, but like, and I'm not trying to pin it on any one thing, cause it's a comedy of errors here between the power play, some questionable coaching decisions, which we can get into later, to, you know, not being able to get a save. Like it doesn't have to be all the saves, just Frederick's goal. And what was that, game four? That should have been stopped. Lindholm's goal in game seven. That should have been stopped. Like the Pastrnak goal, the series winner. You can nitpick that a little bit. Could Sammy have come out and poke checked it? Absolutely. Could Marner have hustled and stayed with Pastrnak? Absolutely. Could Riley have gotten there? Probably. Or at least kept him to the outside a bit. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pin it on any one person. Comedy of errors. And it was time that something happened, and something probably should have happened ahead of time, Oh, Carolina just tied it. Sorry.
You can always tell when your eyes go off. I'm like, oh, something's happening in the game.
I'm almost at a loss. This one didn't really hurt as bad as some of the other ones hurt. I think because we had the comeback, basically the series was over, according to most people, after game four. Just, it makes you wonder what could have been if maybe they pulled the trigger a little sooner. Maybe Keith was fired midseason or before the last season, you know, Trey coming in and getting his own guy right off the hop. Like, there's so many what ifs, and you're just going to drive yourself insane trying to figure out all of them.
And I mean, there's also another one that didn't come up there. And I agree with all of those. It's a myriad of errors that happened, but what ultimately it comes down to is the makeup of the team doesn't allow them much wiggle room for error. Like, yes, you have a core four plus one, whatever you want to call it. And you can say, oh, if one of the guys goes down, everyone else can rise to the occasion. But if one of those guys goes down, like, that is like 25% of the production of your team that just disappears because you have not struck gold top to bottom in the lineup with all these other pieces that you have to basically slot in for a couple hundred grand to a couple million. Like, the unfortunate thing is the cap didn't go up because the world shut down. It should be $92 million right now, but it's not. So we're in this position where the team cannot be constructed in a way that keeps them competitive for 60 minutes. And inevitably we get these things where you could, like, yeah, we can say it's a coaching error on Keefe's part to put out the fourth line after scoring that goal, but Boston's fourth line was out there. Like, he shouldn't be in a position where a line is unplayable because the salary just doesn't allow them to have a line that they should have in the playoffs. Like, that's really what it comes down to year after year, is like all these excuses are centered around one of the core not being able to perform up to 100%. Like, everyone's ragging on Mitch Marner. Like, the fact that Mitch Marner can't perform in the playoffs shouldn't eliminate this team from the first round every year. Like, yes, it's insane that he's underperformed this much every year in the playoffs. And I mean, Matthews only has two goals in his last 10 playoff games, I think. Nylander, every year I give him a pass. He's been fantastic. He's somebody that steps up under pressure, but like, it comes down to these few guys. And if one of them doesn't perform, it's, oh, you know, everyone rag on them. Everyone's teaming up. We got to move Tavares. We got to move Mitch. But like, really, there's so much riding on them that it's kind of, they have to all be there or you lose. So ultimately that's what happened. Like, Domi stepped up, Nye stepped up, but like, you don't have a full four lines that can face a team like Boston, who has a core value culture of winning. Like, you know, Brazo and Lori, these guys that are coming out of nowhere, like JVR even, who should be like on the tail end of his career. Like, they make anybody look effective on that team. And it's just something that the Leafs are unable to do because they just don't have the leadership top to bottom on the lineup.
You know what really helps with that kind of thing, though?
A better coach that doesn't back under pressure.
Well, I won't necessarily even say just that. But what did I open tonight talking about?
So many things. Sorry.
Goaltending,
yeah.
As a player, if you're playing in front of someone that's playing the way that Swayman has been playing, like, you, to quote Marner, you feel like a god. Like you feel like you can do whatever you want, right?
But that comes back to my point that, like, between Samsonov, Jones, and Wall, you've got $5 million in goalies, and that's about the most you can spend. And you've lucked into the fact that you've got Joseph Wall for another year at $766,000. Like, that just doesn't happen to every team. They can't just keep lucking their way into somebody that keeps saving them, because that's what it seemed like with goaltending, is they'll injure their way into finding someone that works and go, okay, this is good enough for now. So it's, again, if they had more money to play with there, it's just, they don't.
But money necessarily isn't everything, even with regards to goaltending. Prime example, look at Winnipeg. Like, yes, Hellebuck's going to probably win the Vezina. But what did he do in the playoffs? Right? Like, he's not a $2-3 million goaltender.
No, he's not.
And he shit the bed. Like,
I mean, that whole team kind of shit the bed.
Oh, they did. They go from one of the most offensive team in the regular season to just allowing 5 goals a game in the playoffs. Now, granted, that's against a team of mutants in Colorado. But, like, Hellebuck's making $6.1 million by himself.
Yeah.
And he was not giving you $6.5 million worth of goaltending in that first round.
I mean, yes, in a vacuum, sure. But like you said, it's against Colorado that's probably going to go all the way to the finals. And Hellebuck, any other night in any other series against any other team, is probably going to be the difference maker, especially if you have a different team in front of him. So, I don't know. I think in the right situation, if you can spend the money to get the right guy, like, that is what makes the difference. I've been hearing the comparison, like, Panarin and Trouba and Fox and Shesterkin and Zibanejad and somebody else together make the same as, like, the core four on the Leafs. So
that is not even close to being a fair comparison, because New York lucked into all those players wanting to cut, like, choosing New York. So it's not like they could get... They chose
New York.
Yeah. Like, Fox and Trouba, that was the only place they were going to go. So it's not like New York had to go out and say, okay, yeah, I'm going to give you $14 million to come here. It's, you want to come here? Okay, this is what you get. Like, it's a little bit comparing apples to oranges, right?
Well, it's also... It goes to show that Dubas got out-negotiated on these guys. He overspent on Marner on his first deal. He overspent. Well, I mean, like I said, you know, the cap was supposed to go up, and we knew Tavares' last 2 years were going to be rough at $11 million. But like everyone's been saying, it was supposed to be after we'd already won something, so it wouldn't matter. But here we are. We got to make decisions and figure out how to either solve this team with 11.5, 11, 11, and 13.25. My God. Or move on from somebody in some insane way, which I don't even understand the logic of. Like, yeah, you can ask them to waive these no trade clauses, but like, what are you getting back for them when you're up against the wall like this? Like, what's the point? It's, I guess you either let them walk or you get a mediocre return.
So, like, there was reports that teams are already contacting the Leafs on players like Marner.
Yeah.
And personally, I honestly think it might, as good of a player as he is, breaking team records, everything like that, he does sometimes seem to be a little bit of a passenger in the playoffs. Doesn't elevate like a Knies was incredible this playoffs. JT even had his moments. Willie was great once he finally came in. You get a player like Marner, and despite the quote-unquote demons that he has playing in a market like Toronto, teams are still going to be lining up to get him. Like, two most recent, you know, semi-comparables. Look at Pierre-Luc Dubois.
Yeah, I was going to say, Laine and Dubois are kind of falling into that line with him.
Dubois forcing his way out of a second NHL team in the same amount of time, like, in the league that Matthews has been in.
Yeah.
Like, they're from the same draft, forced himself out of a second team, so there's tons of rumors and speculations that he's a cancer in the dressing room. And Winnipeg still got a half-decent return from L.A., on the other side, even Matthew Tkachuk. Like, everybody's saying, oh, Treliving got fleeced, but nobody was going to predict, okay, yeah, he's not playing with Barkov anymore, but were you going to predict that Huberto was going to fall off the face of the earth? No.
That's insane. No one could have called that.
So, Huberto and Uyghur's stepped up and been an incredible part of that Calgary team ever since being there.
Yeah, so if Huberto had worked out and it was kind of like a 1-4, 1.5 there, that would have been a great deal. But of course, here we are.
So at as much as it's doom and gloom, like, oh, nobody will give us a bag of pucks for him, just get rid of him, that way you get the cap space, we don't need anything in return. Calm down. Go outside, touch some grass, pet your cat, whatever you have to do. Like, there will be another day. We'll all wake up in the morning and be able to get on with our lives. It's going to get sorted out. At the end of the day, there might be some players that we wish are going to be back on our team. And shout out to Marty. He's been pointing out he's a big Marner fan. He doesn't want Marner to move. He's been talking about some of the Leaf players that have moved in recent memory and gone on to win cups. Well, yes, that's a very real possibility, but it sure looks from an outsider's perspective, like, not that Marner's quit on the team, but it's something's not there. He's looks almost finished with the media, with the pressure, everything like that. It's an easy one to link up because there's cap space, there's prospects, there's picks, but a lot of people are saying online a place like Anaheim. I'm not saying trade in there. I'm not saying anything about returns, but a market like that for someone of Marner's skill, where he can be the guy on the team and then get off the ice and nobody knows who the hell he is.
Yeah. And go to the beach and live in the sun. I mean, it seems like it's more his thing, you know?
And here we are.
This is 8 years removed from this whole thing of trying to rebuild, all these guys not coming to Toronto and starting to pull everyone back. You know, everybody that grew up in the GTA, let's get them all back on the Leafs. Okay, well, now we're at the point where it's, okay, Matthews and Nylander, who are not from here, are going to be the center of the team because nobody that's from here can handle the pressure. I mean, Tavares aside, he's been good. He's just aging out of his deal, being reasonable.
Well, and okay, yes, Tavares has been good and he's been borderline great. Like, he was never a generational talent. Like, NHL wise, he was never a generational talent. He was always a very, very good player, like a superstar. And now he's at that point in his career where he's not a superstar anymore, but he's still a star.
Yeah.
So the $11 million for him, yes, that's high, especially with the COVID frozen cap, everything like that. But if you had him at even 7 or 8 million right now, nobody would be saying a damn thing about that contract.
I mean, if it was 7 or 8 right now, but I think what people are looking for, if he is going to come back, is something in like the 4 or 5 range for like the rest of, you know, what is he? 30. Geez, he's only 33.
Yeah, he's my age. He's not dead yet.
Why does it feel like the guys... No, but why does it feel like he's like 36, 37 when people talk about, you know, he's slowing down. Like, I mean, I get it, but yeah, if he's going to stick around for like 2-3 years, like I'd do it for 5, maybe.
Like, honest to God, I don't see him going anywhere. He loves the team. He loves the area. He's glad to be home. Like, he wants to be a part of the solution here. And it might just be my Leaf colored glasses, but I really do think that he's going to take a pay cut because he wants to stay. He wants to continue to be part of that solution for the team.
Yeah, I agree because, I mean, he would probably give up the C in the process, but like he's somebody that has been, like you said, he's a superstar who's now a star. He's got the experience. He's been to enough playoff rounds at this point. He's seen a lot of people come and go on this team. He is still kind of like if he transitions into like that Thornton role where he's around as like the team dad, great.
When he kind of already is, right?
Yeah, but I feel like he's more of like an active part of the team still. I guess more like Spezza in the last part of his career here where it was like he was kind of almost an assistant coach at the same time. Like if Tavares kind of moves into that role, I don't know.
And like he's 33 and this, if you look at tape of him, I can pretty much guarantee you that his skating this year was more efficient and faster and more agile than his skating in his rookie year. Like he's never been a super fast skater. He hasn't been.
Yeah.
But as long as you have the hockey sense in the hands, you don't have to be. Like, look at Joe Pavelski. Pavelski's never been a fast skater, and he's still a beast.
I was going to say, look at that slapshot goal that Tavares got in the playoffs here. Like, that's something that nobody else on that team was going to even attempt to score on.
Or the drive to the net. Like, I know he got a lucky bounce with it going off the side of the net and a skate to get denies for the OT winner. But, like, that is what you have to do.
Drive
the net. Someone's closing on you, you don't just dump it in the corner or circle back into the corner. You put your shoulder down and you dig in.
Okay, so let's bring this back. So Sheldon Keefe gets fired. What's the temperature on that? Because I know he wasn't great in the playoffs. He has a horrible playoff record. But it feels like his message was just not landing with these guys anymore. And I know, like, that's kind of indicative of a coaching change, but it feels like he wasn't wrong in what he wanted the team to do. It was just, it was hard to get these guys to do it.
That's his job.
Like, yeah, fair. That's fair.
Right? And not to make everything simplistic, but yes, you have to come up with the plan or at least be part of coming up with the plan. But you also have to get everybody to buy in. You have to motivate people to want to do it. Like, even look at everyday life. You don't, like, a lot of people don't quit bad jobs. They quit bad managers, bad leadership, right? And not only is it captains, but with, like, hockey teams, it's captains, it's your coaches, it's your assistant coaches, your general managers. Like, you cannot tell me, or I have a very hard time believing that he thought his job was safe with the way the power play went.
Not even season wise. Guy Boucher still has his job today with how the power play went.
Like, I honest to God, I would have hired Berube after game four. Like, I would have fired Keefe and hired Craig Berube mid playoff series.
Well, look, there's been a couple times throughout the season that we've had the should we fire Keefe conversation when this team just looked abysmal and couldn't put two and two together. They couldn't make passes. They were losing to teams that they had no business losing to that probably cost them their position when it came to the playoffs. So, yeah, it could have come earlier in the year when the playoff, but then when, what was it, January, they were at like a 50% power play, and then it's just was a slow nosedive from there. Like, I think, I know that the assistant coach runs it, like Guy Boucher was running the power play, but at what point does the head coach have to step in and go, hey, why has the power play been declining over the last 4 months? Like, can we talk about this? Like, I don't know why nothing changed there. And into the first round, it was like even worse. There's weird accountability and leadership going on in this dressing room. And I don't know if it's starting from just the head coach or higher or lower. And, you know, I don't know. But something's got to change here because this is too many years in a row of the same result. And we can say that last year they got over the hump, but, you know, it meant shit all this year, so I don't think it means anything in the long run.
Yeah. There's so many, like, it's such a weird season because they were such a different makeup coming in with the snot or grit or whatever the hell you want to call it, with Bertuzzi and Domi and Reeves.
Bertuzzi didn't score for 4 months.
Right. And even in the playoffs, there's such mixed reviews because everybody's like, oh, he didn't bury. They were expecting him to do what he did when he was with Boston last year. You know what? I loved having him, penalties aside, I loved having him and his ratness.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, he took Marchand still did score, but I wasn't as afraid of Marchand being on the ice because I knew Bert was out there just driving him absolutely insane.
Yeah, he was a Bunting who took a few less penalties.
Yeah.
And really, that's what he was supposed to be. Like, he needed to score more, and he would have been, you know, exactly what the doctor ordered. But pardon me, getting over a cold here. I liked what Bertuzzi brought. It felt like he was never like 100% fit. Like he made it to a point where he could be productive on the team by, you know, March. But like, I feel like he knows that this wasn't really his best season, and he didn't really find where he clicked until really late. So I don't know. I'm curious to see whether he wants to stick around. I know there's been whispers of him and Domi wanting to stay, but it's, I think Bertuzzi's the one that's up in the air. Domi obviously is going to want to stick around forever, as he's said, but Bertuzzi, I don't know. I got a hot and cold on him all year on how he was feeling with the Leafs.
Like, well, and he doesn't give you anything, right? With regards to sound bites or facial expressions or anything. Like, anytime the camera panned to him, he just had this deadpan, like, blank look on his face. It was kind of hilarious, to be honest. Yet again, it could be me being overly optimistic. I really think someone like him might be, like, I don't think this was the massive payday season that he was expecting it to be.
Yeah, you know, I don't think he gets a raise on the $5.5 million next year.
Yeah, like come to the Leafs, put up a massive season, get $8 million for 8 years and walk away into the sunset. Like, I don't see that coming out of what happened for him this season. So who knows? Do you approach him and be like, hey, we loved having you on the team, you love being here, you know, here's an 8-year deal at $3.5 million.
He's 29. I don't want to sign him for 8 years.
Yeah, but if you can get him at 3.5 as opposed to 5 by giving him those extra couple years.
Yeah, I mean, it's somebody's problem down the road, I guess, but
like honest to God,
it's not a hard at this number to fit in on any team 5-6 years down the road if you need to move it, but my God, it's just scary giving out terms. Starting to feel like the Islanders.
But at some point you have to start doing something like that. Like unless we go and we move Marner, then you have that extra wiggle room, you know, give them 1 or 2 years, a couple million more, right? Then that can work. But if this is what we're going to do, if we're going to be coming back with the core, you have to get creative. Go to both Max and Tyler and say, hey, I want to keep both of you around. Everyone knows what the cap situation's like. You know, Domi especially has bounced around the league. Not only does he love the Leafs, but he's bounced around a lot. Let's give you some stability. Bertuzzi, you know, Detroit, Boston, and then Toronto this year, and he didn't get what he was hoping to get free agency-wise this year, clearly. Both you guys, I want you to stay here. We can't offer you a lot this season. Offer you the same damn thing. 7 or 8 years apiece, $3.5 million. Gives Domi a $500,000 a year raise because he earned it this year. It's a little bit of a drop.
$2 million pay cut.
But at the same time, the security, right? Like you said, he's pushing 30. He's got a family.
Yeah, and I mean, if this year went like this, it's tough to try to count on taking a bet on yourself again next year, because, you know, then all of a sudden you're looking at league min and potentially out of the league, where instead you could be guaranteed 8 years from the Leafs at 3.5, which is what? 16?
28 million total.
What? No. 3.5 times 8?
28 million?
Oh, yeah. Jeez. True. So yeah, that's a decent, even after tax, decent chunk of change. So I guess that you mentioned it, so let's talk about it. What do you think, we'll play it like overdrive. What do you think the percentage chance is that the core four comes back next year?
Matthews, 100, Tavares.
No. The four of them. What do you think the chance is that all four of them are back?
Oh, all four? If I'm being completely honest, probably 90%.
See, that's the thing. It's one thing to have a discussion about what they should do. It's another one to be, we're here again. We know what's going to happen. We know this ownership and president. Like, they're probably not going to do anything. It depends on how spicy these calls on Marner get, but even then, you got to approach him and ask him to waive, and you know, it's kind of a no-no in the hockey world.
Who knows? At this point, he might even want to change, right? Like we said, with everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, as much as they can say they don't check Twitter, they don't read the media and stuff, like, you can tell by Marner's performance, he reads everything, or at least enough of it that it gets in his head, because this guy ebbs and flows with how the media feels about him, and it's pretty obvious. So, if he can go somewhere where there's not people breathing down his neck all the time, he might like it, like we said. So, if the right call comes in and they can approach him and say, hey, Mitch, how does LA sound, or Anaheim, or San Jose? Do you want to go play with Macklin Celebrini in San Jose?
He might.
Actually, I don't know what the hell San Jose could even give us in return. They have nothing, so.
Draft picks?
Ferraro and draft picks? I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much.
I did find out, I think Mason Lorai was taken right after the Leafs picked Ronnie Hirvonen.
Yeah, and Swayman was taken right after the Leafs picked Ian Scott. Like,
and Justin Brazo was on the Marlies and we let him walk.
So that's another thing I want to touch on a little bit here, because everybody always rips on the Leafs. Because yes, you know, look at the number of the Leafs prospects slash players that they quote unquote gave up on who are in the playoffs right now. Mason Marchment, Dakota Joshua, Carter Verhaeghe. Like, these players, we don't know what went on. For all I know, Dakota Joshua didn't want to sign with the Leafs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's not like he was a first overall draft pick that, you know, there's all this attention around. He was in the system and he didn't sign and he didn't stay. Whether he was offered and didn't want it, or, you know, tried to but was asking too much money. Like, who knows? But not every player is going to flourish in every situation. Sometimes you need that change. Like, as great of a player as Jack Eichel is, he's not the same player today as he was when he was on the Sabres. Neck surgery aside, like, he needed that change. He needed that move.
Well, and another great example, as they're in the playoffs right now against their former team, Valeri Nichushkin was drafted by Dallas and they sent him to waivers and now they're getting shit stomped by him. Like,
Nichushkin went, if I remember correctly, I think he went a full 82 game season without scoring.
Let me pull this up.
When he was with the Stars.
Yes, 2018-2019, 57 games, 0 goals, 10 assists.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when they waived him. And then the next season, he had 13 goals in 27 points. And this year, 2 years ago, he had 25 goals. And this year, he's had 28 goals, 25 assists for 53 points for his second 50-plus point campaign. Like, it happens to everybody. It just seems to happen to the team that pays attention the most a lot, you know? When you're looking for it, you're going to find it.
Well, and there's, like, you can go through every single team in the league, and I bet you for most of the teams, I could pick a player that they quote-unquote gave up on too soon. Or, you know, because it's going to happen. Dallas, you have Nichushkin. You know, Jerome McGinley was initially a Dallas draft pick.
Yeah.
Now they traded him for Nieuwendyk. Nieuwendyk helped be a vital part of winning the Cup, but, you know, what Nieuwendyk gave Dallas as opposed to what Ginla gave Calgary over his entire career there. Like, you never know what's going to happen. So, of course, the hockey world revolves around the Leafs, so it's always going to be exasperated.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I'm just looking at Simon Benoit's 3 years in Anaheim. The guy had, like, a total of, it says, 4 goals and 11 assists in 3 years. I mean, look, it happens. And Michael Bunting, we forget,
yep,
was completely passed on, and we picked him up. So, like, it just, yeah, it's just a pain in the ass when it happens. And it's always a talking point because Leafs Nation loves to hear about these. We've just, I think somewhere along the line, this became like our running joke and the media just jumps on it every time they can. There's always an ex-Marley. There's always an ex-Leaf and ex-Growler or whatever. Okay, to bring it back, I think it's probably, like you said, about a 80 to 85% chance that this core is back. I think the only thing that's swaying me a little bit, that 15% to 20, is the fact that they said today, through Nick Kiprios, we can, you know, assume how accurate this is, but if they are getting calls on Marner already, that might change how this goes. If they were backed up in a corner and trying to retain salary on moving JT, I think it's going to be a mess. I don't think it's worth it. And I think you're moving on the guy that would want to stay here out of the two of them. And the idea of letting Marner walk in free agency next year sucks too. So I don't know. The guy's talking about getting an extension July 1st. So they got to start talking about what the hell they're going to do with him.
Yeah. There's things you can do, and we all know, assuming he stays with the organization, Brandon Pridham is a cap wizard.
Yeah.
So, like, playing around on cap friendly, I've gone and built a team basically bringing back the majority of the guys we had, bringing up Fraser Minton, adding Brandon Montour in free agency for 6.5 a season, bringing Edmondson back, and then adding in Brossoit to do a tandem with Wall.
Okay.
And we've got 400,000 in cap space.
I guess you're going to just tell me your team as I wanted to play. Should they stay or should they go?
Sorry.
So I've got cap friendly up here. I did not build a team because I didn't have time to do that. But let's just go through everybody for the sake of the exercise. Austin Matthews.
100% staying. Yeah.
John Tavares.
Yep.
Mitchell Marner. Is he on your team you made?
He is. Yet again, I love the guy. If it was me, I would be sitting down having some very deep conversations. Not that I don't want him here, but is it gotten to the point where it's past the point of no return?
Yeah, I think it's a serious discussion. Like, we got to talk about what's going on because the elephant in the room is we're paying you almost $11 million. And when we need you to play up to that, you don't. So what is it? Is it the pressure? Is it like I don't know. What is it? Is it a new coach? Like, I don't know. William Nylander.
Definitely stay.
Not going anywhere.
Not only is he like unflappable, you cannot get to that guy. So he's like the perfect person to be on a Leafs team with the media scrutiny that this team has. But he's shown time and time again that he can turn it on when it matters. This year, I thought he took a lot of steps forward with regards to being able to be more of that play driver without having to have someone else with him. And defensively, I don't know if he worked with Matthews in the offseason or not, but defensively, he was so much more responsible this year.
Agreed. And this whole thing about Marchand being at training camp, I think Nylander and Matthews should both be at training camp next year with or rookie camp.
It's not a bad idea.
Set the tone. And if you're a superstar forward and you want to score 69 goals, you can also be defensively responsible. They are not mutually exclusive, no matter what Winnipeg wants to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they got to start developing a culture, and if that culture is scoring while being defensively responsible, great. Let's go with that guy's game. Finally, we can say we have an identity. Like, do something. Like, the whole team, like, be like LA, where it's, you know, we could score, but also everybody can strip the puck off of you and we have three strong centers. Like, you know, have something and have players that are going to instill that culture into the people that come up into the system, because that is really like, it's so much deeper why the Leafs keep losing to these kinds of teams that just have a winning mentality. The Leafs just don't have that winning mentality. Like, they don't have a culture that is instilled in everybody that comes up through the system. It's always like, oh, Nye's on his own is fantastic. Well, that's great. Like, I'm glad one of them hit, but like, we've got all these guys that we've been talking about for years that are just kind of kicking around in the fucking Marlies that are probably never going to go anywhere. I don't know. Next. Tyler Bertuzzi.
I'd bring him back. Like, we touched on a little bit, but I don't know if I'd be willing to pay what he's probably going to want. It all depends on that. If I had my GM hat on, I would be offering him more long-term security as opposed to, you know, individual year cap hit, because we don't have the cap space unless a big move's being made. And you can offer him the security. He knows he's going to have a spot. Like, he's shown he can do it. He can be that pest we need. He's definitely got great chemistry with Matthews. You know, doesn't appear to be a cancer in the room. So definitely someone I'd want to keep around.
Crazy that we're saying that. I would never have thought that Tyler Bertuzzi at this time last year when we got him, that I would be saying, yes, keep him. He's great to have. Like, this is wild. Max Domi, we talked about, same deal. If we can offer them both the identical contracts. David Kampf, this is an interesting one, who is in the first year of his extension.
So I love Kampf, and I don't think he did anything wrong, but he was almost getting to a point where we can't afford the luxury of having him, if that makes sense.
I don't know if I would agree with that wording.
I don't really know how else to word it, because with what he's providing you, we're almost getting, maybe not quite face-offs, but we're almost getting the same thing from Holmberg at $1.5 million less a year.
That's kind of what I'm getting at, is I don't think he's bringing $2.5 million or $2.4 million worth of added value to the team. Do I think he's worth 2.4? Yeah, I mean, probably, but I don't think he is in a position on this team to bring that much more. If he's the fourth line center and just killing penalties, and not really generating any offense. Like, he's not the campfire penalty killer that he was, where, you know, you can expect a goal here and there from him. This year was really disappointing from him. So I don't know what you do with him at 2.4. Like, you know, you kind of doubled down on, what did he have? So last year, 7 goals, 20 assists for 27 points, and he was plus 6. This year, he had 8 goals, 11 assists for 19 points, and he was a minus 4.
Like, with the addition, assuming you can sign him because he's an RFA, of Connor Dewar, like I said, he's almost a luxury you can't afford. Penalty clean-wise, he's good. Face-off-wise, he's good. Defensively, he does take a lot of that burden, or he did for Keefe. Who knows, depending who comes in, how he would be utilized. But with Holmberg, with Dewar, I do think that he's kind of on the outside looking in, especially with that cap hit.
Yeah, I mean, Dewar is an RFA, but I think you can get him for less than 2.4 and somehow move on from David Kampf. I think it might end up just being a cap dump for like a fourth round pick or something, but who knows? Maybe somebody wants him for something serviceable that the Leafs can use. Yeah. I want to get a Utah Kerfoot jersey, but I guess I have to wait a whole year, and God knows if he's still going to be on the team by the time they have a name and logo. Okay. So that was Connor Dewar. Cal Yarncroke. $2.1 million for the next 3 years. 2 years, actually. Yeah. Oh, we're going to pause for a sec. We're back. Sorry about that. So Cal Yarncroke, $2.1 million this year. next, and well, I guess two more years at 2.1.
I love him. But like, I love the energy and the enthusiasm he brings when he's out there. The guy's always got a smile on his face, and he's not afraid to dig in there and get in there. But almost in the same breath as Camp, but without the face-off ability. Like, he's not that he's not worth 2.1, but not on this team.
I think, unfortunately for him, being injured this year showed us what the team is like without him and who can step up into that position for less money. And that didn't do him any favors.
Bobby McMahon.
Exactly, right? You know, this is how you find somebody like McMahon, who we re-signed at 1.35. Like I know people are talking, you got to move on from Marner or we can't afford anything, but like, you move on from Kampf and Yarncroak, and all of a sudden that's $4.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's a free agent signing right there, right? Okay. Ryan Reeves, two more years at 1.35, the same as we're paying Bobby McCann.
Personally, I would get rid of him. I know I didn't like the signing to begin with. His first couple games, you know, yeah, he was great. And then he disappeared off the face of the earth for the longest time. We thought he was on Robita Island. And then he made that comment about, you know, ready to go, and came back, and he was playing some great hockey down the stretch.
Yeah, he was. And then playoffs was not good. Oh, you did. Am I going to lose you? Okay. We'll keep going. Oh, there you go. One more time. So, Ryan Reeves, yeah, I think move on from that. Matthew Knies at $925,000 for another year. Thank you very much. We will be keeping you.
I want to be trying to extend him ASAP.
Yeah, July 1st, you start negotiating, because as we learned, the more you let good players play, the more you're going to have to pay them. And then we end up in these shitty situations 8 years later or 6 years later. Okay. Connor Dewar, we talked about. Schmontes Schmolberg.
Holmberg, I definitely want to keep around. Could potentially talk about extending him, but not at crazy money. I think he's going to be a career bottom six guy, but as long as he can continue to drive the way he drives, definitely the type of guy that you need on a team.
Yeah, I think if you can give him the McMahon deal, the two times like less than 1.5, that's not bad. I wouldn't want to give him too much more than that. Like, 800K is a nice number right now. Nick Robertson needs a contract, though. And so does Noah Gregor. But let's start with Nick Robertson.
I'd love to sign Bobby. Part of me almost thinks he might ask for a trade out of town, depending who the coach is that comes in, because he might get a better opportunity. But it didn't work for him. Like, yes, the goals that he scored with the amount of ice time he got this year was just baffling.
He's going to be one that bites us in the ass wherever he goes. Like, you know it's going to 100%.
But he wasn't being utilized properly. So who knows? Maybe that's our secret weapon going forward, because he hasn't been being utilized, and we can just go from there.
So if we do go the route where the new coach uses him properly, how much do you pay him? Because we do have to sign him if we want to keep him around.
Honestly, I could see it being him wanting to bet on himself. He's young enough still, like a year at a year and a half, or at 1.5 or 2 million, something like that. Like, he's going to want a little bit of a
two.
Yeah. He's going to want a little bit of a raise, but he hasn't done enough to warrant giving him a massive contract.
No, not at all. And I think two is almost as high as you could go. Like, I don't think he's really played enough to, I know that the potential's there and we've paid guys on potential before, but the amount that he's been hurt in the few games and the little bit of ice time in those few games, it's so tough to give him any more. Mm-hmm. Why is there no, he's not arbitration eligible.
Yeah.
Why is that?
depending on games played and stuff like that, you classify as a different RFA.
Oh, so he didn't play enough to even be arbitration eligible. So that kind of tells you. Yeah, okay. So Noah Gregor, what do you give him to keep him around?
Or lead man. Like, he's a decent guy to come in and out if you need someone to fill in. But he's basically capping in 2.0. Tons of speed. He'll get a goal here and there. He can lay a hit here and there as well. So he's got that added in there.
What did he finish?
But I wouldn't be breaking the bank trying to keep him.
Yeah, I mean, in San Jose, the highest he ever had was last year at 10 goals, 7 assists. He had 23 points another year with 8 goals and 15 assists. But, I mean, that's kind of his ceiling. He had 12 points, 6 and 6 this year, minus 7. He's never been a plus. Oh, my God, he's a career minus 58. He's never been positive in the NHL at the end of a season. That's rough. Yeah, I don't know. I could take him or leave him. Bobby McMahon, we touched on. Moving on to the defense here. Morgan Rielly, it's a tough conversation there. We've got him forever, till the end of 2030 at this point, at $7.5 million. What's your temperature reading on Morgan Rielly these days after a so-so year?
I still love Mo. Longest serving Leaf. He brings a stability emotionally, and it feels like in the leadership position there, like even if Tavares is out or something's going on, Mo seems to always kind of be a level playing field.
Unless
your name's Ridley Gregg.
I wish he'd have talked to the media after that loss, because the fact that him and was it him and Marner didn't? They were the only ones that didn't make themselves available after the OT loss in Game 7. Like, everything that you said, the fact that he's the longest standing Leaf, he's got the A, he should have been there. Like, he was on the ice for the goal. Like, this has happened to him for a decade now. Like, he should have been there to talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying trade him for it, but, like, it just... I'm getting to the point where him being the center of the defensive core of this team for the last couple of years has just felt like it's like every year the question is, you know, what are we going to do with the defense? And it's like the whole time there's somebody there, but we just kind of ignore that. Like we know that he's not the reliable defenseman that we need, but he's the center of our defensive core. Like he's the guy who's there every year. We're going to keep him around forever. And he's great in the locker room and everyone loves him. But every year it's, what do we do about the defense? And he's the constant. It's just tough, you know?
Yeah, no, it is.
Like I'm definitely not putting the blame on him. It's one of those things where if you every year are talking about like, what are we going to do about this? But like, there's a guy who's been there the whole time and he's kind of like, I don't know, what are we going to do about this? Like, it's not like I'm expecting him to take this new step into being an elite defenseman that he just isn't really capable of being, but I don't know. They need a plan of what they're going to do with a partner. Cause the fact that we got to the point of benching TJ Brody, like this is the biggest question mark.
The defense is, you had the return of form of McCabe. McCabe was stellar this year. Like, he was incredible. Oh, yeah. I'd be wanting to extend him.
Yep. He's eligible July 1st.
Excuse me. You have the emergence of Benoit.
Yep.
And I absolutely love Benny. I'm so happy we extended him for 3 years.
I like this $1,350,000 that we're handing all these guys that we want to keep around. They're all like, give me the Ryan Reeves. Okay.
So, like, it's not a terrible defense core, and they showed that. We weren't blown away defensively. There were some lapses, but a lot of that was structure. Like, a lot of the issues I personally feel like you can fix with a different game plan, a different strategy, rather than needing to completely revamp your defensive core. Not saying we couldn't use a big gun back there like Montour or Tanev, Zadorov, whatever.
They need somebody. Like the general sentiment that I've gotten from reading and listening to everybody is you need somebody that's going to bump everyone down one spot. And then like, I don't think anyone thinks that you have an incapable defensive lineup here. It's just that everybody is like one slot ahead of where they should be.
Basically, you can go back to what would it have been? The 2016 Penguins was the last team that won a cup without a true Norris caliber defenseman on the back end.
Yeah. And Morgan Rielly, like I said, he's never going to be a Norris caliber defenseman. He's going to be a stable puck moving, reliable locker room guy who's going to be there on the power play. Like, I think we know what he is, and he's not going to be any more than that at this point.
He's this generation's Copperly.
That is fucking dead on.
Like, he's not absolutely incredible, but he's not shit. Like, he's not an incredibly shut down defensively, but he's also not terribly defensively. He's got a little bit of offensive flair.
He has a better wrist shot than 3/4 of the forwards on the team. Like,
right. He basically is Cobberly, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah. And we've got him with McCabe. Yeah, this is just, it's just deja vu, man. So TJ Brody, I think the fact that you can let him walk and take that $5 million off the books, like, look, for letting TJ Brody walk and we're somehow moving on from Kampf and Yarncroak, that's, what did I say? That's $9.5 million that you've freed up. Mm-hmm. And we haven't added anybody. I mean, if you add a defenseman, that's pretty much the only thing you need to add in here. Like, even raise-wise, you're only looking at, I think you've still got $7 million.
Well, and then the cap is projected to be what, like 80 minimum, I think 87, 88 million.
Yeah.
If not, maybe going up a couple million more. So
for the sake of Utah, they might.
Oops, yeah. Well, I don't know if
some more money.
I, as horrible as it sounds, I don't think the expansion and relocation fees count towards hockey related revenue, which is bullshit.
No, but we know that we don't get to see the calculation that makes up how much the cap goes up, and probably only two people named Gary Bettman and Bill Daly actually do see it. So my point is, when we're trying to revitalize a franchise, there might be a little like, oh, look what we found. It's an extra million for the cap. Have fun.
Yeah. And with, I think Marty Walsh being the new head of the PA, I think might do a lot of good.
Yeah,
agreed. Because look at how quickly the Arizona fiasco got handled with a new leader at the helm of the PA.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of that was the players saying, like, look, we're not playing under these conditions. This is insane. And then it was also the owners saying, we're not owning under these conditions. This is insane. We're paying for a team to play at a university. You know, these billionaires are probably like, I already have to pay for forgiving student debt, and now I got to pay for the sports athletic center too. Oh, Biden. No. Jake McCabe, we touched on. Timothy Liljegren is an RFA. What are we thinking about Timmy Lils? Because it's been, look, I know we both liked Liljegren last year with Sandin. It was the whole saga, them coming up together and, you know, the Sophie's Choice. But
I've always loved Lily, but unless he's wanting to take the Reeves deal,
which would be a $50,000 pay cut.
Yeah, I honestly don't see him sticking around. As much as I love the guy, same thing. Change of scenery would probably do him some good. Not that he's not capable. He's a serviceable defenseman. He's not a top four guy, and that's what we need right now.
Look, and we said at the beginning of this year, this was the make or break season. He either needed to take the step or we got to move on and just, you know, cut the cord. And I think that's where we're at with Timmy, unfortunately. And really, it's not like Sandin worked out either in Washington. So I don't really feel bad about picking one over the other. Like, it's just...
The only thing I feel bad about the Sandin trade is the fact that we just let Gustafsson walk.
Yeah.
Seeing what he's done this year, we clearly didn't utilize him to the best of his abilities last year.
Oh, no. They had him as a seventh defenseman every now and then, and it was mm-hmm. was so strange. But Liljegren and Sandin ended up being more like a Dermot Hall 2.0, you know? Which one? Neither. So, Connor Timmins, another one that's been flashes of good, but then flashes of meh.
For me, he still hasn't really been given a fair crack at it.
25 games with the Leafs this year, 25 games with the Leafs last year.
Yeah. Give him this season to work on it. He was another prospect that had a lot, like a huge ceiling when he was drafted. Right-hand shot guy. He's got a little bit of size to him. I don't think it would be a bad thing to have him stick around. And personally, I would re-sign Eddie if he'll stay. Edmondson for a year, 2 years, you know, a million. Because I think he was only making $800,000 this year.
Yeah, $875,000. So it's not like he knows where he's at right now.
Give him the Giordano. 2 years and $1 million.
Yeah.
Pair him on your third pairing, him and Timmins. I think that'd be a great third pair.
See, and that's what I mean. Like, Edmondson was brought in and it's like, oh, second pair? It's like, no, he's got to be the third pair guy. Like, we need somebody that's bumping everyone down to where they should be. Cade Weber was just signed. We didn't really see anything from him, so I don't know yet.
The fact that he's, like, almost as tall as Chara, I'm excited to see him.
6'6", 205 pounds.
Yeah, his scouting report out of the NCAA is like he's basically a plywood board back there. Like he just blocks shots and gets people out of the way. Offensively, he, like you or me, are probably going to put up more NHL numbers up next year than he is. But like defensively, he appears to have that ability, so keep him around the team. 6th, 7th defenseman coming in and out, so he can be around the trainers, around the medical staff, around some professionals.
I love, I'm looking at his stats, and they go all the way back to 2013-14 with the Pittsburgh Penguins Bantam Minor, 13U. How do they track these stats? Like, this is wild. And then the teams that this kid's played for, like, so the Pittsburgh Penguins Bantam Majors, then the Pittsburgh Penguins Elite, the Boston Little Bruins, the Boston Junior Bruins, and then Boston University. So yeah, I would love to take this guy who has absolutely no connection to Toronto or growing up here. Yeah, it's great. Also, Team Gray and Team Orange are two teams he's played for that Cap Friendly has on here. Like, how do you know that? Mark Giordano, we're assuming we're going to hear, is retiring.
Yeah, pro scout and or coaching of some way, shape, or form.
So there's another $800,000 off the books. So really, like, there's more money available than I think people are leading on to believe. Simon Benoit gets a $300,000 raise.
Yeah, no, something like that.
$600,000, yeah, $600,000, just under like $575,000. Ilya Labushkin, who was making $687,000 this year, I do not know how that's possible. I guess he took 50% or something.
That's what we were paying him, yeah, because there was retention with his trades.
Just so weird.
Because I think Minnesota, we traded through Minnesota or something like that for retention with him, if I remember correctly.
Right. So what do we think about Mr. Labushkin on his second run through? It was like having Luke Shen back, but not as good.
Like, I have nothing against Labushkin, but I don't think... Like... We said it when we traded for him this year, it was almost like that was a reactionary, like, shit, Giordano's hurt.
Yeah.
And exactly. We don't really have a lot of people around. We need an extra body, right?
Yeah. So I think you can afford to let him walk and bring up one of the young guys you've got for the same price. Like,
yep.
Yeah. Maybe Topi Niemelä gets a Luxy, you know? Or Maxime Lavoie. Or Le Weber
for last spot.
Yeah, true. So what would you do then? It's Riley with UFA, McCabe and...
Benoit,
and then Edmondson.
Timmins would be my top six. And myself, if aside from a trade, if I'm looking at strictly UFAs, I'm trying to go for Montour or Pesci, someone like that. Like I don't want bargain basement again. You're gonna have to spend some money.
Yeah,
but you got to do it.
You have to, because I think that's the lesson that was learned is we can fill this out with as many affordable guys as we can, but you got to really rip the Band-Aid off, get rid of somebody that's making a little too much, and trim some of the fat here. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is TJ Brody at $5 million coming off the books is a huge help. He's been not a $5 million defenseman for a while now.
His fall from grace was fast and hard.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I mean, between him and Muzzin and like, we've just not had good luck with these guys we've brought in that were stud defensemen. Like Gio even dropped pretty quick from being a Norris winning defenseman, right? Like he went from, I won the Norris at 36 to, you can play me every four games or I'm going to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Ilya Samsonov. The roller coaster goalie of the year.
Like, as a person, I love the guy. He definitely showed a lot of resilience coming back the way he did this year. But, like, I guess in that sense, what he showed going through what he went through and being able to still perform is a huge upside. But at the same time, like we touched on, like, no one's perfect. I'm a goalie. I've made some shitty ass save attempts before. I can admit it, but I'm also not getting paid $4.5-5 million a year to stop a puck.
Yeah.
And those two goals specifically, the Frederick and then the Lindholm, both of those should have been stopped. Like those are backbreakers. You don't have to stop all of them. Like go and watch some highlights from Grant Fuhr. There was some 7-4 games. Like the guy didn't have a great goals against average, but when it came down to it, he stopped the ones that mattered.
That's the thing with Sammy. It's like amazing save when it's whatever time in the game and they're winning and the pressure's not on. But as soon as it's make or break, it's just, it's flashes of Reimer and Freddie, you know, it's saves when they don't count.
Like aside from, what have we had? 4 or 5 games of Joseph Woll? Aside from Woll, we haven't had a goalie who's been consistent enough in the playoffs to be relied upon since Belfour.
Yeah. What, you mean trading for Raycroft? No, I'm not even going to go there.
Dude, I loved Raycroft.
Me too.
He didn't, you know, he won the Calder with the Bruins, but he came over and immediately broke the single season or tied the single season record for wins. It's not like he was a terrible goalie. We just had some shitty teams.
He didn't make the trade. It's not like he picked Tuukka Rask to switch places with.
No.
Okay. We're just talking about demons today. I don't know. Tortured fan base. What's that Taylor Swift album? The Tortured
Poets Department? Isn't it?
Tortured Poets Department. Yeah, so we're the Tortured Fan Base Department.
And like goaltending wise, aside from a trade, I'd be getting any and every doctor I can with Woll, trying to make sure that we build up his strength and his resilience. Because when he's in the net, he's got the potential. When he's between those pipes, he is a great, phenomenal young goaltender. And I think the world is ahead of him. But he just has to be able to stay healthy.
So I guess the question becomes, is he your 1A or your 1B?
It depends what comes up in the offseason, but like I like I said, when I did my little team here, I would go after someone like Lauren Brossoit to be a backup, you know, career backup. He's a big bodied guy, won a cup with Vegas. So he's got a little bit of that pedigree and he can handle, you know, 30, 40 games if you had to.
I actually have a Twitter. Somebody had a comment. Give me a sec. It's right here. Here, Seventh Swordsman. I know you guys were against the cap at the trade deadline, but you should give Eric Comrie a look to play with Wall. He was good for the Sabres when he was healthy and got outplayed by UPL and didn't see the net again. Great guy.
Comrie is another one of those ones that he's had potential and he's bounced around a little bit, but he can never seem to get solid footing under him. Now, like, who knows? There's so many different stories. Like, look at Craig Anderson. Anderson went from team to team to team, and then all of a sudden in Ottawa, he's this all-star goalie who's shutting everybody down.
Yeah.
Like, you never really know. Thankfully, our goaltending pool is looking pretty good right now between Wall and Hildeby and Peksa and Akhtiamov.
Petrozelli. Like,
yeah, we have bodies there. We need someone to step up.
Yep. So Martin Jones, goodbye. Sorry, we'll find somebody else to fill that position. And for the first time in God knows how many years, at least going into the season, there's not going to be anyone on LTIR. Jake Muzzin, Matt Murray, and John Klingberg's combined $14.5 million is gone.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. No LTIR, and I believe no buyouts as well.
No buyouts. We're not paying Tucker. We're not paying fucking Kessel. We're not paying anybody. No one is getting paid to not play for the Leafs anymore. And I don't think I've been able to say that in my life.
It's been a hell of a long time. Like, a long time since anybody's been able to say that about the Leafs.
Yeah. Sorry, my laptop's dying. I don't know why it's plugged in. Should be dying. Oh, that's a tag. So that takes us to the end of the roster here. I just want to do a quick shout out to we were tagged in this by Seventh Swordsman. Buds All Day Podcast's off-season wish list. So shout out to Buds All Day Cast. Six things. One, hire a proven winner as coach. Okay, well, that's happening. This was from a couple days ago, which was for reference. 4 days ago. Trade Marner for the best right-handed D you can get. That seems to be about 80% of the fan base right now. Three, acquire a reliable 1B to Walls 1A. Agree with that one. And 4, 5, and 6, re-sign Domi, re-sign Burt if he takes a reasonable deal, and re-sign Edmondson. This team needs a power play goalie and a top four right D so bad. So everyone's pretty much on the same page. So if the entire fan base seems to pretty much know what this team needs, Brad for a Living should be able to figure it out and find it. So I'm optimistic, I guess. It's just, fuck, man, we're in the same place again. And you know as well as I do that, yes, we just went through this. The money is possible without moving Marner. But if they say they're running this core four back, people are going to freak the hell out.
Yes and no, because we've just gone through, 5 years with Keefe?
Jeez, yeah.
Like, quote unquote, running it back. Okay, you're running back the core and you're changing out 6, 7, 8, 9 players every single season. Dubas was always getting the same type of players. This year we tried a different style of player. We saw some improvements in some areas. We saw some, you know, fallbacks in other areas. But at the end of the day, the structure, the coaching, the message was all the same. And it's really easy in this sport to just blame the coach, but you're not going to go out and trade 20 players.
Yeah, and honestly, let's finish with that. So Pete DeBoer had a comment. I'm just paraphrasing. Just saying that like the coaches don't get the runway to actually do anything with a team before they get fired. Like 28 of 32 teams, I think, have changed coaches in the last couple seasons.
Do you know who the fifth longest tenured head coach in the NHL is right now?
I know Keith and DJ Smith were like the longest ones for a while, but what, John Cooper?
Cooper's the longest tenured.
Yeah.
But the fifth longest tenured coach in the NHL right now is Martin St. Louis.
Holy shit.
And he was hired 2 years ago.
So I want to see what the actual stat was. This was from our Inside the Rink chat. Yeah. So since February 22nd, 28 of 32 NHL teams have made a head coaching change. This is from Conrad. Conrad Jack, writer at Inside the Rink, who writes about the Leafs. Yeah, so the remaining four are John Cooper, Mike Sullivan, Jared Bednar, Rod Brind'Amour.
And then Martin Saint-Louis?
Yeah, and Brind'Amour could be on the way out. And
Dubas will fire Sullivan as soon as he hears that Keith's available.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, DeBoer thinks that these coaches aren't getting the runway, but like you said, it's the coaches don't have a union that makes them have these guaranteed contracts that are no trade clause. And like, you can't fire a player, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So you can fire the coach. It's easier to do. And in this day and age, when everything is so strapped with the cap, like that's the easier decision to make. Look, the Leafs were in a position where they signed Keefe to an extension. It hasn't even kicked in yet. And they would rather fire him than go through another year of making changes to the roster. So it just goes to show that the coaches should be taking their grievances up with Gary and not the media.
The media.
Well, I think Keefe is the third coach in the last month that's been fired before the extension has kicked in.
Holy shit.
Keefe, Lindy Ruff, and Granato in Buffalo. All of them had extensions that were going to kick in this summer.
And we all thought it was weird that they offered Keefe an extension in the first place before the season started. Because, look, you bring Brad Treliving in and you think, okay, you're not going to change the coach right away. But you're also not going to extend him. Like, give him the year to see how things go. And then we'll talk. That never made sense to me. And now here we are. Ugh.
So the one thing, we've mentioned his name before, and I don't know what it would take to get him, but say Chief did come in as our coach with Berube, do the Leafs make a push to try to get Parayko?
Why not at that point? But can somebody, I guess, can you, being the only one here, explain to me why everybody is so high on Berube, like why he's the one all of a sudden? Like, I feel like every time there's a change of coaches, everybody immediately jumps on one name. It's like, oh, it has to be this person. Like, why is it Berube?
Because the NHL has recycled coaches back and forth for the entirety of its existence. And well, I know there's recently that. Won a cup.
But like is there any...
That's what it is.
He's got the best track record and doesn't have a job. That's it.
He's a Toronto guy. He doesn't have a job. He's won a cup recently. He's played for the Leafs in the past. From all accounts, he makes his players accountable and he gets the hardworking buy-in, which is what everybody says that the Leafs need. Like, another name was potentially Bruce Boudreau, but a lot of people are saying like he's basically the original Sheldon Keefe. Like, he's a good coach. Not that Keefe wasn't a good coach, but like, Boudreau's a good coach, but he's a little too much of a player's coach. He's very player friendly, whereas the Leafs almost need more of a kick in the ass right now from what everybody's saying.
Agreed. Okay. Fair enough. I'll take it. But if Rod Brind'Amour becomes available because Carolina doesn't want to spend the money on his staff,
offer him Matthews' contract.
Well, here's the thing. It honestly just comes down to money. And this isn't the first time. Like, he's always looked out for his team around him. So if they don't want to pay his coaching staff what he wants them to pay them. He's going to walk with them. So you get that entire group as a package with a blank check from MLSE. Like, and I'm sure he knows that if he walks out of there, there's a couple organizations that can offer a blank check for someone like that. So the Leafs just have to be on the phone with him as soon as that, if they're not already, like as soon as things fall apart with Carolina. Like, if they get knocked
out, they're down 3-0 now.
If they get swept here by the Rangers, this could honestly affect this conversation, right? Like, I'm sure they're trying to re-sign him, but if things start falling apart, who knows? Okay. Boy. I wanted to talk about Utah, but the only thing I guess we have time for is the fact that they don't have a name or a jersey, and I feel like this is crazy. Like, if you want people to buy into your new franchise, like, you got to give them something. Like, I know we've had this whole conversation with the PWHL, but that's a whole league. That's one thing. Like, they needed to get the league off the ground to get people into it. But, like, this is a relocation of an NHL franchise, and you're going to try to sell it to a new city, and they can't really buy anything in the first year.
So, well, I see where you're coming from, and I was completely on board with that kind of argument with PWHL. And I still think there was probably a way to make it work where you could have done it, but they're trying to be careful with PWHL. Now, with Utah, and I've read a couple of the articles that have been written since this whole thing went down, like, this is unprecedented. The way you go from, you know, he meets with Bettman and he sits down and has a lunch with him and says, hey, you know, down the road, if there's ever an opportunity, we would love to be considered.
Opportunity comes knocking.
Right.
Like a Mormon at your door.
But I am
on fire with these. This is why I'm so excited that Utah has a team. I'm going to be making Mormon jokes for eternity. Because that team, you know.
But eternity. Like. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to ignore you. The way everything went down, especially with, we've seen in the past, like, look at what Bettman did to Jim Balsillie. Yes, Balsillie tried to go about it the wrong way, but he fought everything tooth and goddamn nail. Now, part of this could be, as we touched on, Marty Walsh coming in and being like, no, this is bullshit. Our players aren't putting up with this. You need to solve this now. And part of it could be the fact that with the discussions coming out of nowhere, with Ryan Smith and this Utah group, they now had a viable option. Like, it's not perfect, but where in North America, aside from Quebec, and we know they wouldn't do that because of the conferences, would you be able to just literally pick up a team and plop it there and be ready to go come September?
I think maybe Atlanta. Because they also
same thing
put
with
in
conferences, though.
Yeah, but you can move somebody if you have to.
The NHL's just finally got it back. So many years you had Detroit in the Western Conference, right?
Put,
like the
yeah, I know.
Go back to when they came out of the lockout. Detroit was in the West. Columbus was in the West.
Yeah.
Columbus is as far east as Toronto.
Yeah, like, but I mean, the fact that, yeah, I guess you're already pushing it with Nashville, St. Louis, and Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds like such a stupid argument to be like, oh, no, we can't because the conferences.
Okay, but no, but you could bring Atlanta in, and they could be in the Central Division. And then you move, like, Dallas over.
Dallas is already in the West.
No, I mean, like, out of the Central.
You're going to put Atlanta in the Central?
They're like beside Nashville.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Like, they're in the same area. Like, if you're drawing a line down the map, it's like Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, and then Atlanta. You could pretty much consider that the Central Division. Like, you could put Atlanta in the West. It's just as insane as any of Detroit, Columbus, or Tampa Bay being in the West. Like, it's kind of in line with them, but really, it's not a crazy travel for the other teams in the Central.
Yeah, I guess. Like, they're a little farther east than Chicago, but
it's not. Like, barely.
Yeah.
I think that's the only other one. But my, I guess my point is,
Arena though. I haven't kept up with, like, do they still have a place to play?
Expected to cost in the ballpark of $2 billion. State Farm Arena also served as the home to... Yeah, so the Atlanta Hawks Arena, State Farm, was where the Thrashers played. So I'm sure it still has ice, unless they completely decommissioned it. Like... I don't know. I think really what my point was is that, like, if you're flying the team out right away and doing this whole meet and greet with the city and putting so much emphasis on, like, the town buying into having an NHL team, like, you got to give them something they can really buy, because all this comes back to metrics. And if you, you know, at the end of the season, say we didn't sell enough jerseys, it's like, yeah, because people are waiting for the name and the logo before they spend $250 on a fucking Alex Kerfoot jersey. Cause where the hell is this team headed right now? Like, you need to give people something to buy into it, like a hope that, like, this is going to be something worth following. And without a name and logo, that's really hard to sell right away. That's just my only concern, is from a marketing and actually getting this team off the ground and creating another viable franchise. Because, like, we can't fall into a situation where we just have another Arizona Coyotes, where people from day one don't buy tickets, the owner gives up, and it's just phone it in, and we're going to bottom out every year. Well, I can't go through that.
They had 11,000 deposits for season seats within the first, like, half hour.
Yeah, they took on more deposits for season seats than they have seats to sell, and they also don't have a full arena of non-obstructed view, because I don't know if you saw, but a lot of the seats, you can't see the net underneath you.
Yeah,
which is pretty crazy.
But yet again, at the same time, this is an organization, or like a group and an area that can be ready to go right away.
Yeah.
And with regards to jersey sales and that, I was on the same page as you with regards to the PWHL, because I wanted to support the team. Like, hell yeah, I want a Toronto jersey. And then, oh, well, we're not going to put a team name out yet. We want to make sure we get it right. My head was, okay, great. How is that going to help these ladies? Like, you're not going to sell as much. You're not going to get the money. I watched the first playoff game yesterday, which was an incredible game, by the way, a 4-0 win by Toronto over Minnesota, like, amazing. And the crowd was full of jerseys.
Oh yeah. When we went, there's so much PWHL merch, but I do think that's a little different, because, like I said, that was about getting an entire league off the ground. And that's kind of in its own box as, like, something that's a different product that people are excited for different reasons. And it's like an entirely different league. Whereas this is within the NHL, like, you're putting, it's like, it's almost apples to oranges, like, versus apples to other apples. Utah's
never had an NHL team though.
No, I know, but they're in the NHL, and there's 31 other teams that are at the same standard as them. Like, with the PWHL, it's not like one team has a logo and the others don't. Like, it's an even playing field. What I'm saying is, like, you're competing with teams that are established, and you need to come out of the gate swinging as an official NHL team with the same set of standards. And it doesn't seem like that's going to be the case with Utah out of the gate. And I get it. It's just like I said about the PWHL. It's about having something that you can just get out there because you need to. But man, with the amount of money that's behind this team and the sale and what went into the relocation and the amount of meetings and everything, like, there should have been, like, a caveat from Bettman that, like, you got to have some of these things in place. We have to set deadlines for, you know, a name and a logo. You got to have designers and we'll set you up with Fanatics to have everything printed and all that in time, and set up the stores and yada, yada, yada. Like, all of that needed to take place. And it highlights how, I don't know, misguided our commissioner is, but we all knew that.
I don't know. I'd almost be interested in a Logan Cooley Utah Hockey Club jersey. Like,
but like, why?
Uniqueness. Cooley's going to be a great young player.
Yeah, it's uniqueness because they've created artificial uniqueness. Like, if it was a Logan Cooley Utah jersey that you know because of the design is the first year of Utah, it would be exactly the same. But it'd be cooler because it doesn't just say Utah on it in a fucking black shirt.
We have seen worse jersey designs on NHL teams that have logos and names.
Yeah, but at least that's something to talk about. Like, something is better than nothing is my point. Anyway, I think that's all the time we got for tonight. We've been going on long enough. Thank you all. We're back to business here. We'll get some regularity and some games and all that. We'll follow the draft and, you know, free agency and all that that's coming up. And like I said,
there'll be lots of news to talk about.
Full sail towards uncertainty. Can't wait. There it goes.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Leafs Late Night, your night of post-game podcast. Available after every game on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, and more.
Oh, who's going to get traded?